This podcast is generously brought to you by Audible. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to www.audiblepodcast.com/Saratok.
Comments made on the Saratok Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Saratok Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to episode 3 of What's Up. In this episode, it is full of books and a couple of book recommendations by the listeners, so I want to thank you guys for that. I also want to thank you guys for all the feedback that What's Up has been receiving. This has been awesome. So very much appreciated. Beth, thank you so much. Also, thank you to Ben, to Lisa, to Andrea, thanks to Linda, Donna, Crystal, John. Oh my gosh. There's so many people. This is so... I was expecting not this, so this is very flattering. Thank you guys so much for all your suggestions and ideas. We had a couple people that were kind of put out because they enjoyed the Bard selections, but they're not from the U.S. and they had no way to download books. So we've taken care of that, and now you actually will have a way to download the books. Perhaps not from Bard, but you can from Kindle. So hopefully this will help a little bit. Maybe a lot. Also, magazine subscriptions as well. Bard, you know, has the magazines, and people are like, well, I can't subscribe if I can't download the books. How am I going to do the magazine? Well, you can. So hopefully, while it's not absolutely ideal, it is an alternative, and it's definitely cool. I subscribe to a lot of Kindle magazines, so... Anyway, enough of my rambling. Let's get to some books, shall we? What's up in Audible? And Kindle, for that matter. Well, I promised you that there would be a Star Wars book, as it is that time of year. I do not let you down. Our first book in the science fiction fantasy category is Lords of the Sith by Paul S. Kemp. And narrated by Jonathan Davis.
That pleased him. Their terror was a tool he used to accomplish his ends. Yoda once had told him that fear led to hate and hate to suffering. But Yoda had been wrong. Fear was a tool used by the strong to cow the weak. Hate was the font of true strength. Suffering was not the result of the rule of the strong over the weak. Order was. By its very existence, the Force mandated the rule of the strong over the weak. The Force mandated order. The Jedi had never seen that, and so they'd misunderstood the Force and been destroyed. But Vader's master saw it. Vader saw it. And so they were strong. And so they ruled. He rose, his breathing loud in his ears, loud in the chamber, his image huge and dark on the reflective wall. A wave of his gauntleted hand and a mental command render the walls of his ovate meditation chamber transparent instead of reflective.
Next in sci-fi, we have Rhapsody, Child of Blood by Elizabeth Hayden. Narrated by Kevin T. Collins.
He crept up the rise to the crest of the hill, his mismatched eyes scanning the fields below. It was partially in shadow, the scorched grass bent from the wind that rippled across the valley. Aside from the wind, nothing disturbed the silence. As darkness covered the land, he rose to a stand. The brother turned and looked over his shoulder. He nodded and returned to his reconnaissance. A moment later, an enormous shadow joined him on the summit of the hill. In the remaining light of the setting sun, the hilts of the weapons that jutted out from behind the giant's back resembled the armored claws of a gargantuan crab. The sergeant matched the angle of his vision to the brother's, then spoke.
How long we got?
The figure in black paused before answering, his hooded head angled as if listening to a distant conversation.
They are a quarter of an hour behind us. They are not what concerns me.
I know,
the heavily armed giant sighed.
We ain't gonna make it, are we?
The brother's eyes did not leave the horizon.
Ultimately, probably not.
After a moment, he looked up at his 7-foot companion.
You might, if you leave now, head elsewhere.
No, sir,
the giant replied, a wry grin revealing a carnivorous smile.
I've come this far. 'Twould be a pity to turn back now. Besides, it'd only be a matter of time before they caught up with me. If it's all the same to you, sir, I'd rather buy it here with you.
Next, we have The Vagrant, by Peter Newman. Narrated by Jot Davies.
He picks up the jar, flicking something sticky from the lid.
I assume whoever sent you appreciates the scarcity of good medicine and the cost.
In answer, the vagrant kneels and places 2 platinum coins on the ground, sliding them across the floor towards the doctor.
I hope you aren't trying to trick me,
the doctor replies, picking them up and tapping each one in turn with his finger. The coins vibrate, and a brief 2-note duet fills the cramped space. For a moment, neither speak, both moved to other memories by the sound. Dr. Zero holds them to the light, the clean discs incongruous with his sallow skin.
My apologies,
he says, handing the jar over quickly, hoping no change will be asked for.
And if you have any other needs, don't hesitate to come back.
Dr. Zero watches the vagrant go, his fingers twisting together, untwisting and twisting again. He picks up the syringe and, after a moment's deliberation, pricks his finger on it, wincing at the little stab of pain. A bead of blood appears on the end of his finger.
Next, we have Romance. Overruled by Emma Chase. Narrated by Jason Carpenter and Charlotte Penfield.
Most stories start at the beginning, but not this one. This one starts at the end, or at least what I thought was the end, of my life.
Destiny recognized the tall, blonde, good-looking guy standing in the doorway. Not that they'd met before. She'd been hired by the mayor, not by him. But she'd seen him on plenty of magazine covers, television interviews, and internet articles. She stood and smiled. Hi, I'm Destiny Mills. Kipling Gilmore. His eyes were a darker blue than she'd expected, and he had that easy grace that most likely came from a lifetime of being an athlete. Because he wasn't just Kipling Gilmore, he was the Kipling Gilmore. Famous athlete, superstar skier, Olympic gold medalist. The press had called him G-Force, because on skis, at least, he went for speed. Rules of physics be damned. He could do things that had never been done, at least until the crash. They shook hands. He handed her a small pink bakery box. To help you settle in. She lifted the lid and saw a 6 donuts. The scent of glaze and cinnamon drifted to her. It was intoxicating and made her instantly want 15 minutes alone with her sugar fix. Thank you, she said. Way better than flowers.
I'm glad you think so. When did you get to town?
Yesterday. I got to Sacramento the night before and made the short drive in the morning.
You're settling in okay?
I am, and I'm excited to get to work.
Then let's get to it.
And finally in Romance, Rescued by Linda Rettstadt. Narrated by Caroline McLaughlin.
Alex tugged on Walter's leash and directed him across the open lot. Kelly emerged from the building, followed by a man. A very tall, good-looking man. A man who seemed somewhat familiar. Oh, hell no. Kelly and her client came toward Alex and the curious dog tugging on her arm.
Alex, this is Evan Whiting. My sister Alex. Would you believe Evan is Miss Amy's grandnephew? He's moving into Primrose and he's going to open up a new restaurant right here.
Alex stared at him. Then she and Evan spoke at the same time.
You.
Kelly looked from Alex to Evan.
You two have already met?
I thought you were a waitress, Evan said.
And I thought you were a jerk.
Walter strained on his leash and Alex relaxed her grip. True to form, Walter lunged forward and stuck his nose directly into Evan's crotch, leaving a dark, wet stain. Evan jumped back and swore,
You need to control your dog.
No, I don't. She handed him the leash. He's your dog. He belonged to Amy, and we've been caring for him since she got sick and passed. You inherited the house. You inherit Walter.
She turned on her heel and marched back across the lot.
You're a nutcase, he shouted after her. She heard a strangled sound and glanced over her shoulder to see Walter with his front paws on Evan's chest and enthusiastically licking Evan's face.
Mysteries and Thrillers. First in this category, we have Gathering Prey, Book 25 in the Prey series, by John Sanford, and narrated by Richard Farron.
Her voice was harsh by smoke, and a good bit of that had been weed. You're a traveler, the woman said, showing no offense.
You know about us?
Enough to pick you out, the woman said. My name's Letty. What's yours?
Sky. My friend is Henry.
Sky was calculating. This woman was either with the devil or she could be worked. And Sky was hungry.
Let's go up to the park, Henry said.
Hang on, Sky said, back to the young woman.
If you won't give us money, could you get us a bite?
There's a McDonald's a couple blocks from here, Letty said. I'll buy you as much as you can eat.
Them's the magic words, Henry said, suddenly enthusiastic, his pink face going even pinker.
The two travelers shouldered their packs, and Henry carried his guitar case, and they started down Geary, walking toward Market Street, weaving through the tourists.
Where are you coming from, and where are you going?
Letty asked. Sky said,
We were in Santa Monica for the winter, then we started up here a couple weeks ago. Planning to be here for a couple of weeks, get some money, then go on up to Eugene and maybe Seattle.
Henry said to Sky,
I could have sworn I saw Pilot go by a few minutes ago. I heard they were traveling this summer.
Next, there's Memory Man by David Baldacci. Narrated by Ron McGlardy and Orla Cassidy.
His mind seemed paralyzed, but his limbs were somehow still moving of their own accord.
He hit the hallway, bounced off one wall and then its twin as he rocketed down to the first door on the left. He never took out his gun, not even bothering to think that the killer could still be there, waiting for him to come home. He smashed open the door with his shoulder and looked wildly around. Nothing. No, not true. He froze in the doorway as the light on the nightstand dimly illuminated the bare foot that protruded above the mattress on the far side. He knew that foot. He had held it, massaged it, and kissed it on occasion over many years. It was long, narrow, but somehow still dainty. The toe next to the big one slightly longer than it should have been. The veins on the side, the calluses underneath, the nails painted red. It was all as it should be, except it should not be poking above the mattress at this time of night. That meant the rest of her was down on the floor. And why would that be, unless... He edged to that side of the bed and looked down. Cassandra Decker, Cassie to all including, and most importantly him, stared up at him from her position on the floor. Well, staring was beyond her now. He stumbled forward, stopped next to her, and then slowly knelt, his blue jean knees coming to rest in the patch of blood that had collected next to her. Her blood. Her neck was clean, no wound there. That was not the source of the blood. Her forehead was. Single entry gunshot. He knew he shouldn't, but he used his arm to scoop her head off the floor, cradled it next to his heaving chest. Her long dark hair splayed out over his arm like frozen spray from a hard breaker. The dot on her forehead was blackened and blistered from the heat of the bullet. A contact wound preceded by a muzzle's kiss, lasting only a second before the projectile ended her life. Had she been asleep? Had she awoken? Would she have endured the terror of seeing her killer standing over her? He wondered all this as he held his wife for what would be the last time.
Next is The Bone Tree by Greg Iles. Narrated by Robert Petkoff.
Was it possible that a group of long unsolved race murders in this neglected corner of the South held the key to the biggest cold case in American history? Given what he'd learned in the past 12 hours, it just might be. Texas bordered Louisiana, after all, and in 1963, Dallas had been a fundamentalist redoubt of reactionary political conservatism, seething with rabid Kennedy hatred. More unsettling still, in that era, Dallas had been a feudal possession of New Orleans mob boss Carlos Marcello. For decades, finding a link between Marcello and Dealey Plaza had proved maddeningly elusive. But today, new evidence had emerged, revealing a credible plan by the Double Eagle Group to assassinate Robert Kennedy in April of 1968, as well as actions by the group's founder that suggested complicity in the 1963 assassination. Kaiser had long known of a connection between certain Double Eagles and Carlos Marcello. And while he could not explain his certainty, he sensed that the missing links that would tie Marcello to the dead president would soon be within his reach. Now that Kaiser had authorized an invasion into the computer servers of the Natchez Examiner, his dilemma was how much information to pass up the chain to Washington. In the 3 months since Hurricane Katrina struck, he had been operating with near complete autonomy, and he liked it. The breakdown of basic human services in New Orleans, most notably the evaporation of the NOPD, had created a situation of unprecedented chaos on American soil. A veteran of the final phase of the Vietnam War, Kaiser had pushed into that vacuum and deployed bureau resources with the independence and assertiveness of a military officer, and Washington had allowed him all the rope he desired.
This episode's nonfiction selection is Missoula, Rape and the Justice System in a College Town, written by John Krakauer and narrated by Mozanne Marneau and Scott Brick.
It was orientation week, she remembered. I hated it. I didn't do anything. I didn't make any friends. I didn't want to be there. I just wanted to sit in my room. I wished I'd never left Missoula. Then, Lewis Ronan, pseudonym, a boy she'd known slightly in high school who was also a student at Portland State, called and invited her to a party at his apartment. Sweet, Williams thought. Someone I know. It was a small gathering. When Williams arrived, Ronan's friends were smoking marijuana with a hookah. Williams began gulping down drinks. I got really drunk, she said, and started throwing up, a lot, from drinking too fast. A girl I didn't know was hanging out in the bathroom with me, helping take care of me and being nice. The girl offered to drive Williams back to her dormitory, but she was puking too much to travel anywhere. So Williams remained in Ronan's bathroom with the girl, resting her chest against the rim of the toilet bowl, between paroxysms of vomiting. As Williams's retching subsided, the girl repeatedly offered to drive Williams home, but Lewis Ronan intervened each time, insisting, "No. She'll just stay here tonight." Eventually, Williams agreed to spend the night at Ronan's, she remembered. But I was really drunk, so I didn't really have a choice. And then I passed out.
Don't forget, all of these are Whisper Sync ready as well. So you can either download them with Kindle or use Audible or do a little switch off should you wish to.
Real World Fitness. Great guests, great information, and your health, fitness, and nutrition questions answered. Coming to you directly from the training facilities of the Kosiaba Research Clinic, where knowledge is power and inactivity is the enemy. It's Real World Fitness, coming to you every week here on SPN.
And that is indeed a fantastic show. Great information, great advice, and just a great listen overall. Check it out. What's up in Bard this week? Well, to start us off in the romance category, we have Indecent Proposal, written by Molly O'Keefe and read by Carol Dines. DB80438. After one hot interlude, Ryan Kaminsky can't believe she's pregnant with the ambitious political candidate Harrison Montgomery's baby. As scandal brews, Harrison bullies Ryan to accept the public position of his wife, but love is not part of the offer. And in the suspense fiction category, we have Black Sunday by Thomas Harris, DB 53082, read by Annie Wilders. To protest American policies in the Middle East, a fanatical terrorist group plots the annihilation of 80,000 Super Bowl spectators. Their prime weapon is Michael Lander, a deranged ex-Navy pilot seeking revenge, and his handler, beautiful assassin Dahlia Ayoud. Choke, a novel by Chuck Palahniuk, DB52781, read by Fred Major. Medical school dropout Victor Mancini offers a bizarre, angry confession of why he believes he's a loser. He works at a colonial theme park, attends sex addiction meetings, and pretends to choke in restaurants to pay for his mother's elder care. Don't forget, you can also find these books on Kindle. Speaking of Kindle, how about checking out DIY, Fixing Your Resume, by Tim Windhoff. Your resume is your most important career document. This book walks the reader step by step through the process of drafting, crafting, and writing their own stellar resume. It is the purpose of this book to demonstrate the key ingredients to drafting a highly individualized resume that yields interviews. It is not another mediocre resume template book, but an actual guide on how to customize it yourself. And that, ladies and gentlemen, has been What's Up. You can follow What's Up on Twitter by typing What's Up Podcast 1, or you can send feedback to whatsuppodcast1@gmail.com. I hope you guys found some really neat books this week. I definitely found some fun recommendations. I'm looking forward to a couple of those. See, the problem with this podcast is it makes me spend money too. It makes me want to buy things and find books. Again, thanks so much to Bill Kosiaba for your Real World Fitness podcast. Thanks to Audible for allowing us these awesome books and for your service. And again, thanks to you, the listener.